This CityWire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies. From healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution, Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. As with any investment, capital is at risk.
Hi, I'm Céline Boujak, and we will be talking about real assets today. Joining me is Ben Mackey, fund manager at Hawksmoor Investment Management. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Céline. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me. So Hawksmoor recently moved some allocations around, right, from real assets to corporate bonds. First off, can you tell me what you sold and why?
Yeah, sure. So I think a bit of background might be kind of useful just to sort of set the scene a little bit. So back in January 2021, which seems quite a long time ago now, we wrote an article called Time for a Different Approach, in which we basically argued that traditional sort of equity bond portfolios would struggle to generate attractive returns that were capable of meeting client objectives, primarily because we felt a lot of equity and bond markets were trading on very expensive valuations. And we argued that, therefore, as a result, that sort of differentiated portfolios that could look beyond equities and bonds would be necessary to meet those sorts of client objectives. And as a result, we had, you know, really quite significant exposure to sort of real assets that you mentioned, things like niche property, digital infrastructure, battery storage, and so on. Now, when we wind forward to this year, we've seen pretty marked sell-offs in both equities and, of course, the bond market as well. We've seen gilt yields rising. We've seen gilt yields rising and credit spreads widening. And that really creates the backdrop for why we've reduced our real asset exposure. And we can go into it in more detail, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what we've sold, and this has been going on for sort of the course of around a year, we've been selling some of our property exposure. Hasten to add, you know, we have had significant amount in property over the last 3-4 years. All, I should say, accessed via investment trusts, none of it via open-ended funds. Mm-hmm. Use of investment trusts, of course, allows us to get stuck into some really sort of niche areas of property. And we've also been selling some of our real assets. I can give you some sort of specific names if that helps. But
yeah, that would
to give you
good.
An idea of the quantum of the move. So our property exposure within our distribution fund, that peaked around 20-odd percent back in 2020. It's as low as 9% now. And a good chunk of that reduction was done before the mini budget and the ructions that caused in bond markets and also in real asset investment trusts.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually. I mean, when you did reduce your allocation and sold some of this exposure off, was it at a loss or?
Yeah, so a good chunk of it was actually done prior to, you know, the mini budget towards the end of September. And that really catalyzed this spike in bond yields, which in turn caused all sorts of issues in property, but also other real assets. And you know, why is that? Well, it's because real assets have a sort of degree of implicit duration within them. We can talk more about why that is. But clearly with the inflation outlook or the probability that the range of possible outcomes for inflation broadening at the start of, back end of 2021 and the start of this year, and us being aware that, you know, these real assets do have implicit duration, we began exiting things. So some of those names that we exited, Supermarket Income REIT, AEW UK REIT, Regional REIT, all of those were full sales either at the back end of last year or early this year. We also sold Roundhill Music, not that that's necessarily a real asset, but it certainly sits within the alternative bucket. We also sold Atrato On-Site Energy. So those are just a few names, but a good chunk of the reduction in real assets was done in the first half of this year or the back end of last year. Now, we did continue to own some property and real assets and continue to do so now. And they've certainly caused a degree of pain for our fund performance over the last sort of three months or so.
So what have you held on to?
So I think the reason one of the reasons, so this sort of ties in with the point about this idea of implicit duration within real assets, and that plays out in a number of channels. The first is, you know, most of these assets are valued using discounted cash flow methodologies, where future cash flows are discounted to present value using a discount rate. Now, that discount rate is a function of a risk-free component and then a risk premium that's appropriate to the nature of the underlying assets. Now, as the risk-free rate increases, that does obviously have the scope to push the overall discount rate higher. And all things equal, as that discount rate moves higher, valuations fall. The other channel is, of course, a lot of these investment trusts that are used, that we use to access real assets, will employ some sort of leverage. Now, we're pretty wary about financial engineering. We don't like, you know, assets or returns that have been juiced by the use of gearing. But, you know, in a lot of cases, the application of some leverage is appropriate. Clearly, where that debt is floating rate in nature, as the front end of the curve moves higher, their cost of debts goes up, and that can have implications for, you know, the cash flows they generate and dividend cover as well. And so, those things in mind, what did we end up holding on to? Well, first of all, it's assets that have a sufficiently high discount rate to absorb moves in risk-free rates, where we thought that that a move higher in the risk-free rate wouldn't necessarily result in a big shift up in the discount rate used to value the assets. And a good example of that is Gresham House Energy Storage, which discounts the discount rate it uses in its valuation methodology, 10.8%. So that's a pretty big cushion over and above, you know, the 10-year gilt yield, for example. And on the debt side, things like Gresham House Energy Storage, Gore Street, which also operates in that area, pretty low levels of leverage. So again, not particularly vulnerable to the pressure of rising debt costs that we've seen impact, you know, some property trusts and some other real asset trusts as well. And the other really important thing here is, in an environment of rising returns that are available in government bond markets and corporate bond markets, is I think investors have come to look at some of these real asset returns, entirely rightly, you know, in the context of improved returns elsewhere. And if you're just looking at these things on a yield sort of premium basis over what you can get in government bonds or corporate bonds, then that attraction is clearly compressed. So what we're really looking for is real assets that can deliver attractive total returns, i.e., yes, a nice level of yield, but also scope to grow the NAV and grow the capital. And again, Gresham House Energy Storage is a good example of that, in that delivering a half decent covered yield, but also scope for lots of write-ups to the valuation, which is driven primarily by the fact that when their assets move from being in construction to being operational, you see a fall in the discount rate, and that drives valuation uplifts. And the pipeline in terms of their assets that are moving from being in construction to being operational, pretty good visibility on that. So, you know, to sum up, it's about having discount rates that have margin of safety in them. It's about investment trusts that aren't overly geared or where the gearing is fixed. And it's also about total return and not just yield. And that's really where we've been focused in terms of where we've retained exposure within the real asset space.
Mm-hmm. And I know that in the past, private equity trusts have been good performers for Hawksmoor portfolios. So I'm just wondering how that sector is doing now and how you're viewing it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's been quite a lot of pain in the share prices of private equity. So we've seen, you know, listed private equities traded on discounts forever, pretty much. And I think that's a legacy of issues, particularly concerns on regarding balance sheets around the great financial crisis. And we've seen discounts on private equities trusts blow out to sort of 40%, in some cases 45%, which is much wider than has been typical. Now, I think, you know, part of that is investors moving to price in write downs to those NAVs as marks come in from public equity comps. And we've seen weakness in, you know, across the board, but particularly within the US and within the NASDAQ. And, you know, investors rightly probably saying, well, you know, private equity valuations are not going to be immune to that. But I think the moves in the discounts are probably more than, you know, discounted that sort of risk. I think balance sheets in general, within the listed private equity space are much, much stronger than they were in 2008, 2009. So I don't think concerns there necessarily explain why the shares are trading where they are, although we had an interesting snippet of news out on Princess this morning where they've cancelled the dividend due to liquidity constraints, inability to make realizations given difficulties in sort of leveraged loan markets. So I maybe that's a niggling concern, but you know, we're very focused on the trust we own, Oakley Capital being a good example, and they're continuing to make realizations uplifts to carrying value. The portfolio remains conservatively valued, and the operational performance of the underlying companies continues to be excellent. So I think where we're exposed, we're, you know, it's been moderately painful in terms of the share price performance, but from here we think, you know, on any sensible time frame, the returns from those well managed listed private equity trusts should be pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. So you've held on to those holdings?
By and large, we've held on to our private equity exposure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Certainly, yeah, the changes we made within the portfolio have really centered around reducing our exposure to real assets and increasing our exposure to, you know, more vanilla assets as they become cheaper.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, some of the issues with real assets that you highlighted. So is this more a long-term kind of view on how they're going to be with rising inflation and rising interest rates? So what's your outlook more generally for the asset class?
Listen, I think long-term real assets have a really important part to play in a multi-asset portfolio. They, you know, our focus within real assets has long been on sorts of assets that have underlying cash flows that are pretty well defined, where economic sensitivity is low, and that can obviously bring decent diversification benefits to a portfolio. First and foremost, we're concerned with what are the likely returns from these assets. And as I say, you know, over the last few years, we've seen real assets delivering total returns of kind of, you know, 8, 10, 12% in some cases. And actually, at a net asset value level, there's probably, you know, we think that on by and large, those sorts of levels of return can continue, so sort of 8 to 10%. Now, the sell-off that we've seen in private within property particularly, we think has been largely rational. So the discounts that have blown out and the net initial yields that they're implying, they do seem pretty rational given what's happened in the bond market. So we're not relying on or wouldn't want to rely on a sort of narrowing or amortization of that discount as part of the total return story. But there's plenty of real assets that can deliver 8, 10% total returns in a fairly sort of non-economically sensitive way. Now, that's really attractive, of course, when gilt yields are at sub one and when investment grade credit spreads are at 100 basis points. So you're getting, you know, 200-250 basis point return from investment grade credit. It isn't so attractive when you can, you know, when the risk free rate's at 4.5. Admittedly, it's back down to 3.5 today. But when you can buy actively managed investment grade credit funds yielding more than 10%, we need to be paid in a liquidity premium for owning some of these real assets. And at the moment, we can achieve similar, if not better, returns from, you know, vanilla credit. So in terms of the long-term view, we're not macro investors, so we don't really try and predict what's going to happen to inflation. We saw, you know, how polarizing that debate was, you know, people in the transitory camp, people in the non-transitory camp, and clever people on both sides of the argument. So we don't have any edge in trying to guess that sort of stuff and spend a little time thinking about it. When our allocation to real assets will change is driven really by, you know, what are the respective return prospects from those sorts of assets versus things like corporate bonds and equities. And as those vanilla markets or those more traditional markets have cheapened this year, you know, their return prospects have improved. And that's been alongside our sort of acceptance recognition that there is implicit duration within real assets. It's really been as much about this emergence of better value in more traditional areas that has driven that shift. And, you know, if corporate bonds spreads tighten aggressively, if gilt yields go back to 1.5%, then I think there's every chance we'll start buying these sort of 8-10% total return real assets that we've owned previously.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you so much, Ben.
Great. Thank you very much.
This Citywire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies. From healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution, Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. As with any investment, capital is at risk.